Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
We've been talking about rebirth. In approaching this topic, it's wise to put aside the question, is it true? But rather to ask, what does this mean for my practice? I proposed last week that we can use rebirth as a matter of outlook to frame our practice independently of our viewpoint. What does that buy us? The Buddha assumes a similarly charged outlook when he highlights the bare monotony of human existence. Which is greater, the tears you have shed while transmigrating and wandering this long, long time? Crying and weeping from being joined with what is displeasing, being separated from what is pleasing, or the water of in the four great oceans. This is greater, the tears you have shed. Elsewhere he spoke in similar terms about the blood spilled, the mountains of bones we've left behind, the cemetery swelled. We might similarly talk about our addictive behaviors, the flaring up of anger, hatred turning to retribution, lust that overcomes wisdom, all of the stuff of our lives that leads to relentless suffering, fear, anxiety, pain, than to imagine these projected over an unfathomable past to threaten an unfathomable future. Such considerations reveal the full horrifying depth of the human condition. We've been making the same mistakes over and over again for an awful long time. Isn't it time to knock it off? A wise American monk, Bhikkhu Bodhi, writes, "To downplay the doctrine of rebirth and explain the entire import of the Dhamma as the amelioration of mental suffering through enhanced self-awareness is to deprive the Dhamma of those wider perspectives from which it derives its full breadth and profundity. By doing so, one seriously risks reducing it in the end to little more than a sophisticated ancient system of humanistic psychotherapy." The wider perspective also seems to fulfill a foundational principle observed in many other contexts about what we experience as most meaningful in life, that which is bigger than we are. For instance, higher meaning for the scientist is found in the forward march of human knowledge. Higher meaning in most religions seems to come with God above and heaven or hell beyond. The eminent psychiatrist Viktor Frankl, a Holocaust survivor, noticed that an important predictor of survival of the inmates of death camps is what kind of future lay beyond the barbed wire that one might live for, be it surviving family members, God, or in Frankl's case, the desire to complete his disrupted research. A funny story appeared in an American news magazine in 1956, which apparently is true and gives us an entry into the idea of outlook as opposed to viewpoint. A friend was visiting in the home of Nobel Prize winner Niels Bohr, the famous atom scientist. As they were talking, the friend kept glancing at a horseshoe hanging over the door. Finally, unable to contain his curiosity any longer, he demanded, "Niels, it can't possibly be that you, a brilliant scientist, believe that foolish horseshoe superstition." "Of course not," replied the scientist, "but I understand it's lucky whether you believe it or not." I anticipate at this juncture some raised eyebrows among my listenership, for rebirth is not across the board an accepted viewpoint in modern culture, but it wasn't in the Buddha's time and place either. The Buddha has advice for us in this regard, which I preface here by clarifying the distinction between viewpoint and outlook a little more precisely. A viewpoint is what one actually believes, what one would assert in one's most rational and sober moments. For instance, when one is participating in a quiz show or lecturing at a university. An outlook is what guides one's actual behavior as a basis of one's everyday decisions in life. Outlook is the primary motivator in life. One behaves as if one's outlook were true, or maybe it actually is. We thereby hope that our viewpoints are always factual and that our outlooks are ever practical. We all have both, and this is the significant point. We don't generally seem to mind if they are logically inconsistent with one another. Here are some examples. Someone raised as a Christian may sincerely believe, viewpoint, that after death his behavior will be judged and his soul will accordingly go to either heaven or hell, and yet may nonetheless live like there is no tomorrow, that is, hedonistically, under the overwhelming influence of a materialist culture, outlook. Another example, a Skinnerian behavioral psychologist might believe, viewpoint, in the lab or in the classroom, that human mental states are not real, yet shouts out encouraging motivational words, outlook, to his teenage son as he plays on the school football team, or consoles his little daughter when the dog steals her cotton candy. Another example. One might sincerely believe that physical death is the end of consciousness, viewpoint, and yet one treats one's newly deceased loved ones with great care and respect, having their rotting remains arranged to produce a pretense of peace and comfort, outlook. Another example. Many believe that the universe is entirely material, simply playing itself out mechanistically and deterministically, viewpoint. Yet none of us knows how to live in such a world. As Isaac Bashevis Singer puts it, you have to believe in free will, you have no choice. Free will is a universal outlook, even of those of contrary viewpoint. Another example, how many of you talk to your dog or cat, outlook? How much do you think they understand, viewpoint? I personally talk to squirrels, frogs, and even bugs. Another example, something like half of American scientists find consolation in God, outlook, who nonetheless virtually never finds his way as a factor into their published work, viewpoint. Another example, there is physically nothing more to money than ones and zeros in computer memory, or markings on pieces of paper or metal, viewpoint. And yet we behave as if it is something of substantial value, outlook, and count on others to do the same, with remarkably practical results. The Onion in 2010 published a satirical news article in which the economy grinds to a halt as, quote, nation realizes money is just a symbolic, mutually shared illusion, unquote. A final example, even knowing that the beautiful blonde in the car ad does not actually come with the car, viewpoint, he buys it anyway, just in case, outlook. For the Buddha, rebirth is always of beneficial outlook, regardless of one's viewpoint. Indeed, he fully acknowledges that many will have a viewpoint that conflicts with rebirth and karmic fruit. Householders, there are some recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this. There is nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed, no fruit or result of good and bad actions, no this world, no other world, no mother, no father, no beings who are reborn spontaneously, no good and virtuous recluses and Brahmins in the world who have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. It is to be expected that they will avoid these three wholesome states, namely good bodily conduct, good verbal conduct, and good mental conduct. And they will undertake and practice these three unwholesome states, namely bodily misconduct, verbal misconduct, and mental misconduct. Here is the kicker. This unwholesome viewpoint cannot win. Whether or not it turns out to be true, their viewpoint is of no practical value. Now, whether or not the world of these good recluses and Brahmins is true, let me assume that there is no other world. Still, this good person is here and now censored by the wise as an immoral person, one of wrong view who holds the doctrine of nihilism. But on the other hand, if there is another world, then this good person has made an unlucky throw on both counts, since he is censored by the wise here and now, and since on the dissolution of the body after death, he will appear in a state of deprivation in an unhappy destination, in perdition even in hell. He has wrongly accepted and undertaken this incontrovertible teaching in such a way that it extends only to one side and excludes the wholesome alternative. Indeed, our viewpoint does not need to lock us into a particular outlook. This pragmatic favoring of outlook is the primary message of the Kalama Sutta. Kalamas. When you yourselves know these things are good, these things are not blamable, these things are praised by the wise, undertaken as a whole, these things lead to benefit and happiness, enter on and abide in them. The sutta also goes on to recommend rebirth as a pragmatically justified outlook. Actually, what seems like a sleight of hand comes easily since the Buddha does not really countenance viewpoints. For in fact, we cannot rely on the veracity of viewpoints acquired by any conventional means in any case.
Come, Kalamas, do not go upon what has been acquired by repeated hearing, nor upon tradition, nor upon repetition, nor upon what is in Scripture, nor as a result of thought, nor upon an axiom, nor upon careful reasoning, nor out of delight in speculation, nor upon another's seeming ability, nor upon the thought, this monk is our venerable teacher.
In terms of veracity, what we can rely on is what we discover through direct, unmediated experience. Until then, all of our assumptions should be held loosely and favor what we experience as clearly beneficial. The Buddha seems to have liked outlooks more than he liked viewpoints. Most people assume that rebirth requires that there is someone to be reborn, a self, a soul, a me that wanders from one life to the next. In Buddhism, rebirth is simply a continuation of a process. Much as fire perpetuates itself from one candle to another, or from an improperly extinguished campfire to dry grass, to trees, and to houses and neighborhoods, it just keeps going without there being a fixed thing that moves from one place to the next. That process is described this way as the content of the 12 links of dependent co-arising resulting in this mass of suffering. When Chogyam Trungpa was asked the question, what is reborn if there is no fixed self? He's reported to have aptly replied, your neuroses. Rebirth in Buddhism is a middle way between the extremes of annihilationism and eternalism. The middle way is identified in the Buddha's first discourse as the Noble Eightfold Path, a path in the middle between the pursuit of mortification of the body and the pursuit of hedonism. Elsewhere, it's identified as the 12 links of dependent co-arising, a process in the middle between two opposing philosophical viewpoints of eternalism and annihilationism. Eternalism is the view that the soul or self is constant and endures indefinitely. Annihilationism is the view that the soul or self ceases to exist at the time of physical death. Each viewpoint seems to have enjoyed significant currency at the time of the Buddha, and coincidentally enjoys significant currency today. In fact, the two definitions of the middle way are related. Eternalism tends to frame religious practice as a matter of sacrifice in this life in favor of the future liberation of the self or soul, and thereby to encourage the pursuit of self-mortification. The Buddha, to be, seems to have practiced along these lines in his years as a wandering ascetic before his eventual awakening. Annihilationism tends to see in sensual gratification an appealing basis for one's life, since any personal happiness or spiritual development gained would expire at death. An arduous path towards awakening would seem absurd. The Buddha to be seems to have practiced hedonistically, from all accounts, as something of a young Nepalese playboy prior to the beginning of his wildly successful spiritual quest. The middle way is a radical means of avoiding the pitfalls of the extreme views of eternalism and annihilationism. It posits a continuity past physical death, but it loses the ontology of a soul or self, common to both eternalism and annihilationism. At the same time, it preserves enough of the continuity of eternalism to encourage responsibility for the future. By analogy, if little Timmy lights a fire, which is not a thing that passes from one place to another, and as a result his neighbor's house burns, he cannot avoid the inevitable blame by claiming, "The fire I lit was over there and much smaller than the one that burned Ernie's house down." The cessation of birth is the cessation of samsara, the final goal of the Buddhist path, the achievement of the arahant. A standard passage is repeated throughout the discourses to describe awakening.
When he knows and sees thus, his mind is liberated from the fermentation of sensual desire, from the fermentation of being, and from the fermentation of ignorance. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. He understands birth is ended, the holy life is fulfilled. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being.
The cessation of birth is a high bar. With any of the links of the chain, we might be inspired to bring that link through diligent practice to cessation and thereby to end samsara. Any link will have this effect. An alternative to bringing the link to full cessation is to limit the worst effects of the link. In the case of birth, we might seek a felicitous rebirth, for instance, rebirth into a heavenly realm or into comfortable circumstances within the human realm, rather than into a realm of woe. That would not end this massive suffering, but would limit future suffering. Heavens, for instance, are reached as the karmic result of practicing generosity and ethics. By leading a virtuous life, much as we create a heaven for ourselves here on earth, we can be reborn into a heavenly realm in the next life. by leading a depraved life, much as we can create a hell for ourselves here on earth, we can be born into a hellish realm in the next life. Heavenly rebirth has, for probably most Buddhists historically, been the primary goal of practice for this life, not nibbana. Since birth is uniquely inaccessible among the links of the chain to observation or practice in this life, it is weakened or brought to cessation only by limiting becoming or bringing becoming to cessation. Becoming is the immediate upstream link from birth and will be the topic of our next two talks. Thank you.